From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, our recent forum for candidates running in the primary election for New Hanover County Commissioner. Four Democratic candidates are running for two seats. City Councilwoman Celette Andrews, New Hanover County School Board member Judy Justice, Dr. LaShonda Wallace, a former chair of the county's Health and Human Services Board, and County Commissioner Rob Zappel. Since there are only two Republican candidates, Commissioner Leanne Pierce and Wilmington Planning Board member Richard Collier, who recently ran for city council, there is no GOP primary this year for county commissioner. Pierce and Collier will face off against the winners of the Democratic primary. The Democratic candidates joined us here at WHQR Studios in downtown Wilmington, along with our colleagues from WECT and Port City Daily, including WECT's John Evans, who was our MC for the evening. Candidates took questions from the press and the public, and on today's show, you can hear what they had to say. We'll start with John Evans introducing our first round of reporter questions.
We're going to begin with our reporter questions. Once again, the candidates will have 2 minutes to answer the questions as they are posed by the members of our media organizations. First up, with questions for candidate Rob Zappel, will be Connor Smith from WECT News. Connor?
All right, thank you, John. First question is for Mr. Zappel. You've expressed your frustration with the current county budget and its impact on county residents and staff. How would you work with other board members to restore the county services that you consider important? And does that include a tax cut or tax raise, excuse me?
Thank you, Connor, for that question. I think I would do what I'm currently doing, which is after we had what I felt were somewhat disastrous cuts back in May of last year and June, that was appropriately noted by Ms. Andrews of $36 million cut out of a budget. It was cut too deep and has really harmed many of our departments. But what I did immediately after seeing what was going on was going back to my fellow commissioners and starting the conversation and trying to impress upon them, and in some cases, educate them to just how severely they were hurting the citizens of New Hanover County. And we saw in several occasions, particularly the school nurses, 14 school nurses were reinstated after we were able to have conversations. One that has kind of slipped under the radar, but was the upgrade of our 911 system. If you can believe that, that was first cut in that process. But after going and advocating with all three of my Republican commissioners, they said, oh, you're right, and did it. Same thing with 11 social workers that we're still working on today to get them reinstated. But by going down issue by issue, instead of screaming, but going down and trying to educate as much as I possibly could to let them know what the real effect was having. We've seen the problems we've had over at our public library system. Well, we saw the cuts that were there. Unfortunately, we lost our library director. There were many reasons, but one of them is we have this incredible situation here where New Hanover County is opening two public libraries in a 12-month period. Show me another community that can do that. But how about we put the money behind it to put the staffing and the materials we need for both of those libraries? I'm working on it with those other three Republican commissioners.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This question is for Celette Andrews. New Hanover County is reviewing its comprehensive plan right now and has pulled back on housing density and limited where housing can be built. At the same time, the county has pulled back on its affordable housing funding, which was $3 million annually until this last budget cycle. If you get into office, what would you like the county to do on affordable housing in particular?
Yeah, so there's a few things, and limiting the density is not one of them. We need to, instead of putting blanket limits on density, we need to really look at density in a comprehensive manner, and particularly in corridors where there is transportation and where there's already infrastructure. So that's one tool. Another tool, they need to reinstate the $3 million a year that they walked away from. The city is currently putting 1% of our general fund aside for our affordable housing fund. The county did commit to $3 million a year for 5 years. They did it for 3 years, and then they walked away from it this year. I would definitely reinstate that. In addition to the funding, they disbanded the city county, the county portion of the city county workforce housing advisory committee. And the city has gone ahead and reinstated our portion of it because we couldn't even meet without the county people being in it. We didn't have a quorum. So we've reinstated it as a housing affordability advisory committee so that we take care of all levels of affordable housing, not just the workforce level, but all the way down to all levels of affordable housing. So that needs to be done. The county needs to rejoin the city in that effort as well. A couple of other things that the city does, we have a revolving loan fund for housing emergency home repair. That's something that the county needs to look at. Something else that has skipped, I've forgotten about right now, but there are several things that the county could be doing with affordable housing that they're not doing right now, but the basic thing is they need to recommit to the funding and they need to recommit to working with the city and rejoining the Affordable Housing Task Force. Thank you.
Good evening. This is a question for Judy Justice. So the county is currently expecting a boom of development in the northern part of the county where water and sewer is about to come online. We've heard a lot of different visions for that region, everything from preserving green space to single-family homes to nodes of denser development, including apartment homes. What would your vision for the so-called final frontier be?
A lot more thought in how this development turns out. My biggest fear is that we won't have the infrastructure to be able, which we have a big problem with right now, to be able to handle the influx of people that want to move into this county. We are, I believe, the second fastest growing city in North Carolina and like the eighth in the nation. And they're talking about there are two areas out there by I-40 in the county, in the northern part, that they're talking about huge developments. The problem is we don't have the infrastructure right now to handle it. So this is the job, and this is one of the reasons I'm running for county commissioner. I am very familiar with it because I work with the schools, and I see what's happened because of the overdevelopment and the lack of thought to the facilities that we need to offer for our kids and the staffing and the funding for all of that. So as commissioners, we need to make sure that when these huge developments are approved, that we also have the infrastructure to go with it. Now, we have a real problem from the state because the state refuses to fund a lot of this infrastructure we need, but this has not always been the case. Back before 2012, there was what's called impact fees that the legislature approved of. They took them back because of the recession in 2008 for a while. The Republicans took over the control of the legislature and have refused to reinstitute impact fees. They expect the counties to come up with the money. So what we need to do is we need to be working with other counties around us, and this is my vision, to try to return impact fees to the legislature. And not only that, we're going to have to possibly because they are going to be built, when these developments are built, we are going to have to be able to come up with the funding before we actually allow them to be built. I mean, that's all there is to it, because we can't just shove kids into schools or have roads that people sit in for 2 hours and, you know, just to get home when they live a mile away.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Charlie Fawson with Port City Daily. My question is for Dr. LaShonda Wallace. Dr. Wallace, would you support the county amending its density restrictions or raising its height limits to support the construction of more housing? And if so, what areas of the county would you like to see this denser housing concentrated?
Well, that sounds like a trick question. Yeah, where would I like to see it? From my understanding, the community members are not interested in seeing any more development. But I don't think that is smart to say that no development will occur, because obviously we do have to respond. I believe in supporting the comprehensive plan that exists, and when the time comes to make those decisions, to use whatever information we have at that time to respond. So if necessary, I'm pretty sure that some density will be appropriate, as well as some mixed use as well. But having that information when the time comes, once I'm elected, I can have an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific areas of the counties that kind of stand out as maybe could use more development or lack thereof?
I think that we could strengthen some of our areas that are under-resourced, maybe like on the north side, but not necessarily with gentrification, but to support the communities that already exist. Yeah, in that sense, yeah.
Okay.
Back to you, Celette Andrews. You've gotten a lot of criticism within the Democratic Party for running in this race when it would end your term on council early. Can you explain why it's important for you to move on from your current position and take this new role?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I explained in my opening statement, the things that I've been working on are the things that are really important to our community, and they have been stymied by the actions of the current county commission, the current majority on the county commission, in withdrawing from the things that are so important to our county, such as affordable housing, the continuum of care for homelessness initiatives, the Community Relations Advisory Committee. So we really need to turn that around at the county level. I am so excited about the city council that you all have helped elect, and we've done so much. We've gotten straight to work in our first three meetings. We have reinstated the Housing Affordability Advisory Committee. We've reinstated the Community Relations Advisory Committee. And in our third meeting, we were able to send a message to our state and federal regulators concerning the port deepening and how more studies need to be done on that. So I have every confidence in the city council being able to continue without me. And it's a really good time that I take that fight to the county commission and turn that around.
We did have an audience question asking whether you would commit to a full four-year term on the county commission.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And one of the things about the four-year term on the city council is that it actually, there's a structural issue that it runs on a different year than all the other races. So I had a choice of either continuing for my full four-year term on the city council and waiting out and not being in office for a year or running now and from a position of strength and a position of continuing to serve the community. And so I decided that was the better course of action.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This question is for Judy Justice. And you've also gotten a lot of criticism from the Democratic Party for your decision to leave the school board to run for mm-hmm. county commission. So similar question, you know, can you explain why it's important for you to move on from your current position and run for commissioner?
First of all, I want to assure everybody that if I were to leave the school board, I have total faith in the Democratic Party and myself as part of it to be able to have somebody replace me that be more than qualified. Why I am doing this, I think what happened last summer pushed me over the edge. I told you earlier, I've taught government. I've lived here most of my life. As on the school board, we are the number one expenditure for the county. I work with budgets over $350 million. We're the second largest employer. As I said, I'm from here. I know this community well. And then over the summer, when the Republican-controlled county commissioners cut back $36 million, and I saw the quality of life suffering, especially the people that are most vulnerable, and I realized I couldn't just stay on the board of education when I knew that I could do a heck of a lot more as county commissioner. One of the things that bothers me is not just overdevelopment. It's also I'm very concerned about the hospital. It's substandard. I'm concerned about the endowment. That's $1.6 billion that's supposed to be for our needs. And right now, it's not transparent, and it is packed with political appointees. We have a crime rate that's above the national average, and there's a lot of things we could be doing to deal with that differently, and that's not happening with the county commissioners. I could go on and on about the problems in this county. This is why I am running for the county commissioners, because of my vast experience, leadership experience, and many other positions, and over the years as an elected official, I have actually learned how to work with people across the aisle and be able to come to consensus to change things. In fact, over the last year since I've returned to the school board, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but we have actually been working, Republicans and ourselves, and they've calmed down some of their extreme behaviors, and I know that I've also looked at a couple things differently, and so we have got some good stuff done. I want to do that good stuff with the county commissioners.
Thank you so much.
Another question for you, Dr. Wallace. So in our questionnaire, you said you would like the county to establish a dedicated transit fund. to stabilize public transportation operations that support choice ridership. Can you kind of talk about how much you would like to see in that fund, and would it support WAVE's operations? And if so, what's your five-year vision for what you would like WAVE to look like?
Well, there is a transit fund already exists. I believe that the county need to invest more to support what is already in place. So, of course, that would also support, WAVE Transit, as well as the third party that is involved. What was the last part of your question?
If so, what's your five-year vision for what WAVE should look like?
More frequent rides. So that we can have choice riders, so that people can get to their wage-earning jobs, so that they can afford to live where they work at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On choice ridership, I guess, in your questionnaire, you also touched on this a little bit, but you kind of pointed out people maybe who have dedicated cars that they use daily for their travel. How would you kind of convince those people, like, hey, maybe public transportation is not so bad?
Well, first of all, if we can have more frequency so that people can get to their jobs on time, so that people can access the appointments that they need to get to, especially for healthcare. I don't recall writing about people that had cars.
Just but definitely, choice ridership.
Yeah, choice ridership, but definitely having more frequent rides so that transit is reliable. I think that that's one of the concerns that we have. But it's also having rides that are in... that go beyond the city limits, extended into our county area. I think that would be very helpful for those that are coming into town to get to work and access resources as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty, and for Commissioner Zappel, you said in our questionnaire the county and city should function as partners, not competitors. How specifically can the city and county work better on issues like housing and homelessness?
First, they can start by having meetings together, the old-fashioned way of actually sitting down at a table and trying to hash through these things. But there's a couple of things. Connor, thanks for the question. There's a mistaken feeling out there that the county has backed out of the homeless issue and affordable housing, or what I like to call living affordability as well as housing affordability. The county has put in this year's budget in 25-26 for homeless support $5.5 million in the variety of different programs that we offer, everything from the Healing Place to a variety of programs dealing with mental health and substance abuse. That's a significant amount of money, but there's this feeling out there that the county has backed out, not doing anything. Well, we are doing a lot. We simply don't get credit for it. The Salvation Army, their new 75-bed facility out there off MLK, it's wonderful. It's terrific. And it's been a hardened structure that the county helps support with $500,000 going into that to make it happen. So I just wanted to clear that up if anybody was thinking that the county has backed away from that. But back to your question, how can we get more things done? I think reigniting those committee meetings that a majority of the county commission said they weren't interested in doing, and reigniting them. I also wanted to touch on a couple of things of the other questions. I know we don't get a chance to kind of go back and forth. But there was one of the questions dealt with the last frontier. Ben, I think that you were talking about it there. Well, what we're seeing from a county's standpoint, there's close to 30,000 new dwelling units will be out there in that space, all supported by the county and Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, thinking back 3 years ago to put in, as we're now getting to the end of it, water and sewer. So if you go up there, there's an east-west corridor there, Holly Shelter, Sidbury.
That's all the time, Mr. Zappel, but thank you.
Oh, I know.
I'm
can
sorry.
Go on.
Thank
Connor,
you.
I know you're so patient with me. I apologize. We're doing a lot at the county to make that happen.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment with more from our forum with Democratic candidates in the New Hanover County Commissioner's primary race. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. We return now to our forum with Democratic candidates running in the New Hanover County Commissioner's primary race, hosted by WECT and Port City Daily, along with WHQR. Here's WECT's John Evans.
We're now going to move on with questions from members of the audience here, those who we solicited from our audiences, readers, listeners, viewers. We're going to start with WHQR's Kelly Kanoyer. Kelly?
All right, this was from one of our audience members, Kevin Foley. So for Ms. Andrews, if the school bond passes this fall, we'll eventually have enough classrooms for the students we currently have. However, the last several years, the county has seen reductions in funding for schools and had to fire teachers across the county. Is the county prepared to raise taxes to hire more teachers and staff to work on these new classrooms?
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a philosophy of cutting taxes or raising taxes. I think we need to find out what's important, to maintain our quality of life here and what's important to our taxpayers and set the tax rate appropriately. I think the current attitude of trying to cut taxes to the revenue neutral rate, which I think is a crazy concept that we have here in North Carolina, we have to publish a revenue neutral tax rate. Other states don't require that. So revenue neutral just means that we're going to bring in the same amount of money that we brought in last year. Now, how many of you could survive when your insurance is going up and your utilities are going up and, all of your services are going up? Well, that's what's happening with the county, too. So the idea that we can try to have a race to the bottom to try and get to a revenue neutral tax rate or even less, to me, doesn't make any sense. So I would work to set a tax rate that makes sense, that we can provide the services that our people need.
And since we have a bit more time, do you support the school bond that we're going to see this fall?
Absolutely. We have so much deferred maintenance, and this is one of the reasons why I don't support revenue neutral tax rate or race to the bottom with cutting taxes, is because when we have things like deferred maintenance, if we're not, it's pay me now or pay me later, if we're not paying into our facilities maintenance, into our buildings, into our capital improvements projects, it's going to cost more. We're just putting this deferred maintenance down the road onto our children.
Thank you.
Another question for you, Dr. Wallace. This one came in online from John Wolfe. Climate change is one of the biggest problems facing humanity today, and our coastal region will continue to be affected by it in the near future. If elected, what will you do to reduce the county's carbon emissions, and how else would you make New Hanover County a leader in sustainability?
What would I do to help the county reduce its emissions? Well, currently, I do believe in the county's strategic plan. They already plan to have a plan to reduce their carbon footprint. So that existing plan, of course, is something that we would support. Additionally, more specifically, talking about addressing climate change, I think supporting the infrastructure for how we address stormwater runoff so that our properties can be protected, I think that that's something that's extremely important, and that continuing to support and invest within that that area will be something that I will continue to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then sticking with environment, trees are a big deal for a lot of residents here. I guess, what would you do to maybe strengthen tree protections, or what's your viewpoint on protecting trees here?
Protecting trees, I think a lot of protection for trees come up when they talk about rezoning. So I think asking all the questions when people are asking to rezone, developers are asking to rezone, how are we going to protect the spaces and the trees that exist? How are we going to continue to preserve the land and the green space that is here? Using mixed use as well, but exhausting those opportunities when they come and ask to rezone to make sure that we are not cutting down more trees and that we are creating opportunities to plant more trees to keep our environment tree friendly as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a question for Judy Justice that has been coming in on my phone for about 2 years. You mentioned the endowment and the hospital, which are both bound together by the legal sale documents. And in the past, we have seen some hesitancy to push hard on the endowment and on the hospital, often pointing to the terms of that asset purchase agreement. What would you do differently, if anything, than past elected officials?
First of all, I don't know which one to start with. Let's start with the hospital, okay? The hospital has been rated substandard in two different categories, and it's an embarrassment to our county. And what we need to be doing as a county commissioner, since we're the only body that can really have a lot of say in it, I think that if nothing else, possibly an ad hoc committee to investigate how we could improve this, what kind of ability we have to do, we have as a governmental organization. I bring in our legal counsel to look at it because this needs to change. And just saying, well, next year is going to be better, next year is going to be better. I've been hearing this for 4 years. One of the reasons I'm running for city council.
Sorry about that.
Of county commissioners, is because of the one of the treats. My daughter was a patient there repeatedly, and I feel it's because of their poor treatment that she passed away. I personally am not the only person that feels that way. And then let's go to the endowment. This is something that we have talked about before, right? Years ago. In 2020, when the asset purchase agreement was first signed, I noticed the very first use of it was for public schools. And immediately I asked my other board members on the school board to do something about it. Let's go dig and try to get this kind of help. You've got $1.3 billion. My other school board members at the time refused to pay much attention to it, and now you look at it, everybody wants it. Now, not just the school board, not just the county commissioners who are now wanting it. What can we do? Well, first of all, we can appoint people to that board that aren't political cronies. I don't know what else to say. This is heartbreaking to see how this has developed. We don't know what's going on. We, again, need to look at our legal resources as a commission to do a lot more than we are now. I think there's too much passivity. I don't know why. It could be because people are connected to people, but this has got to change. This is a rich county with that endowment, and we need to be helping our community.
Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Zappel.
Yeah, got it.
Are you in favor of deepening the river? Can you explain that? That question is from Anonymous.
Thank you very much for the question. For those of you who are not unfamiliar with it, there's a proposal out there by the Army Corps of Engineers to deepen the Cape Fear River from the port all the way down to the Atlantic Ocean. It's about 28 miles in there. Take it from 42 to 47 feet, so deepening it by about 5 feet more. After diving into the document that they've put out, they being the Army Corps of Engineers, it's called a DEIS, a draft, important word, environmental impact statement. And in that, they raise all the different issues that could happen, both environmental as well as economic, that would be affected if you have this major project. What's important in this conversation is the fact that the U.S. Congress has already earmarked $843 million for this project, on the condition that they can work through the DEIS, in other words, answer all of the questions that would come up in that. They had public hearings and took public comment. I know last December I spoke here at the Skyline Center to the Army Corps of Engineers about it and gave my comments. I really focused my comments on it because there are many environmental issues. I focused my comments on the economic issues that were raised in the DEIS. In my opinion, they were not answered. They essentially want to deepen the river so they can get larger ships in and who can bring more containers or TEUs. Currently, we're doing about 342,000 containers per year. They want to raise that to over 1 million. But in the next paragraph, they say, we don't have the landside infrastructure to support that. Along with it, in the same thing, there was no mention of the transportation issue. So you've got 1 million TEUs over the course of a year, and how do you get them down to the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge? There needs to be a dedicated corridor along Carolina Beach Road for that more. None of that's discussed.
So
they simply
just
didn't make
to clarify, you're in favor or are you opposed, yes or no?
Oh, they simply did not make the economic argument that they need to be able for a project of this size. Certainly in my opinion, and I know my opinion's being supported by a lot. It's also important to note that they hit pause on that, on the whole DEIS procedure.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Ah, Connor, come on, we can keep talking. For God's sakes, man.
For Dr. Wallace, another question. This one's coming from our audience here. What types of partnerships, policies, and or approaches would you support or initiate to improve the quality and access to healthcare here in New Hanover County?
Well, first I would like to go back to what the county was doing before, and that's to reestablish the relationships we have with non-county agencies. Those agencies supported individuals, right, I would say, with boots on the ground services. So coordinating those resources would be essential. I think I missed the last part of your question.
Partnerships, policies, approaches that you would support or initiate to improve quality and access to healthcare here.
Well, coordinating with the non-county partnerships, again, that would basically be bringing those resources together. But I do also believe that the county could do real good by our citizens by building a stronger relationship with our healthcare system. I think there's some opportunity for some accountability in regards to acceptable healthcare, and having those transparent conversations on behalf of our citizens would be really important. So strengthening the relationship with our healthcare system, and again, going back to the table with our non-county agencies that support individuals on their day-to-day resources need.
Mm-hmm. And you've written about social determinants of health and political. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe touch on something political that you've noticed here in New Hanover County that you might be interested in changing?
Something political that I would like to be...
A political determinant of health?
A political determinant of health that I would like to change? Let me think. What I do understand is that policy impacts social determinants as opposed to the other way around. So I know that as we make decisions about housing, when we make decisions about transportation, when we make decisions about our environment, those policies, they impact our everyday life and how we show up. So where we live and where we work is really important in regards to policy impact. Our well-being. So those decisions that are made in policy, they impact our social determinants and not the other way around. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Just a quick note here. The question you are about to hear me ask came from New Hanover County Democratic Party Chair Jill Hopman. There was a bit of miscommunication. She'd intended the question to be for all candidates, but hadn't specified that when she sent her question in. And since our format had reporters asking individual questions to each candidate, this ended up being my question for Judy Justice as part of the rotation. You can hear some of the back and forth that follows, but we do get to the question.
It's a question for Judy Justice from Jill. Win or lose, do you promise to fully support the two Democrats who run in the general election?
What?
Well, all right. This is who I got assigned to ask questions to, so.
Okay, wow. Okay, that hurts. Our party is united. I'm not sure where that question is coming from, but I think anyone that's up here, no matter who the final two people are gonna totally 1,000% support them. Just as I will for the school board too, whoever ends up running for that. I'm not sure why that question was asked. Or why anyone would think.
And to clarify, this was not directed to you on the question card. This was for any candidate, but since I'm assigned to ask you questions, that's
okay.
Why I'm asking.
Well, then I will take the insult back. But that was hurtful.
Or you can at least be insulted by me instead of the crowd.
Okay. All right, Ben, you and I have done that before. I'm insulted by that's nothing new there.
No.
Okay. Vice versa, I'm sure. Anyway, yes, I will totally 1,000% support anybody who is the final two candidates to run for county commissioner. Okay.
And real quick, since I got a second, I wanted to follow up. You were talking about infrastructure and the strain on infrastructure with development in the northern part of the county. It sounded like you were talking about school facilities, because as Mr. Zappel pointed out, water and sewer is there. It's the whole reason that development is coming. So just for people listening, you're talking about, when you say infrastructure, you mean buildings to put children in.
Buildings for children, also roads. You could even maybe possibly put law enforcement in there. There's a lot of different things that go along with that kind of development that they're talking about. The only thing that we were allowed after the 2008 decision to end the impact fees that counties are allowed to do are the sewer and water. That's the only thing they can. They can tax the people or have the people that come into these developments pay for. They don't have to pay for schools. They don't have to pay for roads. They don't have to pay for, I can go on and on. The different infrastructure that goes when you have that kind of development because of the lack of being able to charge impact fees. They expect the county to raise taxes. All I know is if we're going to have to raise taxes locally here, we're going to have to do it in a very thoughtful way, because we can't build these developments unless we do it right. We're already seeing what it feels like now.
Thank you. And I'll save Mr. Zappel the time of explaining the difference between system fees and impact fees. There is a nuanced difference between what CFUA charges a new development versus the old version of impact fees. And maybe we'll do an article online about that, but we don't have time right now.
Ben, that'd be great, actually. System development charges is what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Please do, yeah.
All righty, Mr. Zappel, this question is from Lonnie Hashimoto. North Carolina's Constitution places responsibility for a sound basic education on the state, yet counties increasingly backfill gaps through local funding and bonds. Where do you think local advocacy has been effective or ineffective in influencing the General Assembly, and what would you do differently?
Well, I think I would like to do more of what we're doing right now. Our schools are underfunded, and it starts at the state and their responsibility. They have not kept up, the state legislature, with their responsibility of the amount per student. But here's the, like most stuff dealing with the General Assembly or in government, there's a kind of the dirty details. Both the county supplemental funding that you referred to, Connor, is what we are doing to backfill the money that we believe in New Hanover County. Because you live here, we're going to make sure your kid gets a good public education. Right now, that is set at $3,703 per student. The state also funds on a per student basis. The problem here in New Hanover County is, as we continue to expand, and I can't explain the next part of this sentence, our school population actually is going down. We continue to expand as a community, school population goes down. So that means all those metrics that you're tying money to on a per student basis, they're actually declining. So what's the fix? It comes down to, it gets forced down to the county. We have to provide more. On top of that, $3,703, and every year we get the request from the school board to increase that amount. Mm-hmm. There's only one place we can go for that money, and that's in taxes. Now, I am totally supportive of a best quality public education, but I also recognize, the putting it all on the backs of the taxpayers is difficult. I also say in the same breath that we need to expand pre-K. You look at any study that's out there, educational or government-wise, there is nothing better you can do to a community to rise it up than to invest in those youngest, those 3 and 4 year olds. Yeah, the ones that we go, oh God, will they please, be quiet? No, you put the money into them and it sets them up in a position so that when they get to first grade, they can have an academic career that's successful.
Thank you, sir.
They have a chance for that. Pre-K, pre-K, pre-K.
All right, well, we need to take one more quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more from our forum with Democratic candidates in the New Hanover County Commissioner's primary race. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. We return now to our forum with Democratic candidates in the New Hanover County Commissioner's primary race, hosted by WHQR, WECT, and Port City Daily. Up now is my colleague Kelly Knoyer with more questions from the public.
Celette Andrews. As a commissioner, you will appoint members to the endowment board. Will you support an open public application process with published criteria, public interviews, and meaningful community input for those appointments? And I'd also like to ask how you think they've done so far on the endowment.
Thank you. Great question. That's been one of my passions on the city council. I have been on the appointments committee for 2 years. I am now the chair of the appointments committee. And people have noticed that since I've been on the appointments committee, I put out regular information to the public about what openings we have on boards and commissions, and really, really try to get people to apply. That hasn't been the case in the past, and it certainly hasn't been the case with the endowment board. So I would take that passion that I have for citizen participation and expanding citizen participation and take that to the county, not just to the boards and commissions, but certainly to the endowment board, and try to get people on the endowment board that reflect the community, the diversity of our community, the diversity of thought, the diversity of different backgrounds, and demographics, and also to get people that really reflect the values of the community and the mission of the endowment.
Do you feel that the current endowment board reflects those values?
I don't. I think the word political cronyism was mentioned. I think that that's probably as good a descriptor as we have right now. And I absolutely think that we need to work to think beyond our own circle of friends and really reach out to the community and really develop leaders. You know, that's one of the reasons I started Wilmington 101, the Citizens Academy that we have in Wilmington now. I'd like to take that to the county. We need to develop leaders from amongst our citizens and get them to understand how the local government works, how the city government works, how the county government works, and get them to start seeing themselves as leaders, get them to start applying their skills to the different boards and commissions, and certainly to the endowment.
Thank you.
Dr. Wallace, another question for you, similar to the last as well. As commissioner, you will appoint members to the endowment board. Would you also support an open public application process with published criteria, public interviews, meaningful community input for those appointments? And then what are some of your goals as far as collaborating with the endowment?
Well, right now, the application process for the endowment is the same as for any board that the county actually appoint members to. I believe that the appointment should reflect the pillars of the endowment. So those pillars are community safety, education, economic development, health, and social equity. I believe that the people that serve on that board should have some background or experience, not necessarily just individuals that come from maybe development or law, but, you know, just to represent the community. In regards to collaboration with the commissioners, right now the commissioners usually sit on the boards that they appoint people to, but that process is not the same with the endowment. So there are opportunities for some transparency. I think it can build community trust if there could be more openness with participation from the commission in their communication with the endowment as well.
Mm-hmm. Are there any measurable outcomes that you'd like to see as far as working with the endowment?
Any measurable outcomes? I think the outcomes would be from their investments, seeing are we actually moving the needle in those pillars that have been invested in. So what are the outcomes in regards to, you know, your investment in these nonprofits, and are we making progress in what the intent of the endowment was for? So that's where I would like to see the measurement be in display.
Thank you so much.
All right, another question for Judy Justice. In past years, we've seen many times the school board has come to the county and asked for money and not always gotten everything it's asked for. The sheriff's office almost always gets what it asks for. Do you feel that's appropriate, or would you do things differently?
I would definitely do things differently. Once on the board, I'm going to, well, first of all, I understand how important it is this funding from the county is on the inside basis. Luckily, right now, we have Stephanie Walker on there also, who's also been on the school board and has seen the inside of the school budget. Also, I was on school board elected originally in 2018, and I can tell you there was county commissioners and even superintendents that were not doing what was really responsible for our local schools. And that's one of the reasons why we have to have this bond issue right now. Is for almost decades, the county commissioners have denied funding of the our facilities, and they're literally crumbling. So once I get on there, I'm going to be a lot more understanding of why we need these funding and how important it is. Now, Mr. Zappel mentioned that, or I believe it was him, mentioned that our school numbers are going down. That is a temporary situation that was a result of COVID. I can assure you that considering how fast this county is growing, and really we have excellent public schools, this will be increasing. So that's not going to save us. We're going to have to spend, as a county, more money towards our schools. Just a reality. If
so
we want to have quality
just to follow
schools.
Up the flip side of that question, though, the sheriff's office. Do you feel they're adequately funded? Would you encourage them to tighten their belt? Would you spend more? I mean, how do you feel about the sheriff's office funding?
Okay, we have a real problem with the lack of funding for communities. And that's one thing that the county commissioners cut back funding on. I'm going to use Port City United as an example. That program did an excellent job, except for the area where they allowed gang members. That was not well thought out, and it should have been taken away. But they did a whole lot more for the community, and yet they took the funding away. Those are the kinds of things we need to be investing in the communities. The sheriff's department, they get what they ask for. They're doing an adequate job, but I think we could be doing a much better job for safety in this county if we were investing more in our communities. We don't need to invest less in the sheriff's department, but we need to invest more in our communities.
Thank you very much. And I know I'm going to get hate mail, so I should have said sheriff's office. Sorry, folks.
Ben. All right, Mr. Zappel, we'll get you an endowment question as well.
Sure.
How can you ensure the endowment serves the public's interest and is held accountable when it doesn't?
The endowment is its own body, has appointments from the county and from Novant Hospital. The county has 5 appointments. So I think that's the part of the answer there, is that's people that we appoint to the endowment and having that conversation, having a process that fully vets who we appoint there would be very helpful. And frankly, this is true for all of the appointments that we do for the county. We appoint to over 30 different committees and commissions. And I think we can do a better job at that by simply having a better process, something like the city does. And I know that's imperfect too, but certainly having an opportunity to sit down and talk about the values that we think are important as a county. And that's why we're there. The 5 commissioners are representing the county, so that we have a better understanding with our appointees of how they will do. Now, holding them accountable, let me back up just a second. The endowment is a beautiful thing. And the way it's structured now, it should be around for every person in this room's life, their life of their children, their grandchildren, and their grandchildren's grandchildren. And that's the beauty of it, to be pumping in, tens of billions of dollars into our community. That is a wonderful thing. And I know there's great debate about there, what they should be doing with it. And everyone kind of comes through their own lens is, well, they ought to be doing more on the medical side, or they ought to be doing more on the school side. Well, the truth is, if you really look at all the disbursements they're putting out there, they're trying to cover the whole community. My personal feeling is that the nonprofit community, which is one of the reasons that the endowment was established. I say that because I was at the table when we created the endowment, and there was a real focus on that there should be more of a focus. Think what could happen if the endowment across the board put $25 million into our nonprofit sector here, into the 60 or the 100 nonprofits in New Hanover County. We have, by the way, almost 1,000 nonprofits, but the top ones. Think what it would do. It would create stability and allow those nonprofits to flourish and do all the services, many of them critical and essential services, that we have in New Hanover County.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sorry, Connor. I did it to you again. Thank you for the question. I appreciate it.
This final question is for you, Ms. Andrews. So there's an option with this election, the general election. We're either going to have a majority Democratic or a majority Republican commission at the end. If you're on in either scenario, what would your leadership style look like? How would it differ?
Yeah. Unless the Libertarian candidate wins a seat, and then we might have a little bit different mix. But yeah, with a 5-member board, it's very typical to have dominance with one or the other party. And, you know, would my leadership style change? You know, I don't think so, because I have been on a majority Democratic city council. Some of you might not know this. I also served on a city council in Arizona in a very, very red city, and one with more votes than anybody before had done, and served very successfully, and served with a majority Republican council. So, and now I've had the pleasure of serving with a majority Democratic council, and now with 100% Democratic council, which is really kind of awesome. Would my leadership style differ? I don't think so, because I don't really think that there's any Democrat or Republican way to really serve the public at the local level. There's no Democrat or Republican way to fill a pothole, it's been said. And, you know, I think that as long as we're doing our best for the people of the community, I don't think my style of leadership would change, no.
We have seen quite contentious battles around the budget, for example, between Republican and Democratic leaders. So I'm curious how you think those tough fights might go.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for people that are in the minority in a 3-2, you know, Republican majority commission like we have now. And a lot of times when you have a clear majority and they have a clear philosophy of what they want to do with the budget, it is very difficult for the minority party to affect that. But I think you need to just soldier on, as our two Democrats on the county commission have done so well, continue to appeal to the public, and continue to work to get better people in office that represent your values.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my colleagues at WHQR, WECT, and Port City Daily, who made this and our other forums possible. A special thanks to Ken Campbell and George Scheibener here at WHQR for technical support. Thanks also to our candidates, Celette Andrews, Judy Justice, LaShonda Wallace, and Rob Zappel. You can find out more about all of these candidates, including their responses to our candidates' questionnaires at whqr.org. And just a note here, Zappel is a member of our WHQR Board of Directors, which has no say in editorial or news coverage decisions, and whose members we cover without fear or favor. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have questions, comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, you can email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom. And in the meantime, early voting is now open, so get out to the polls and do your civic duty.